This is the Smallmouth Crush Podcast. If you're a hardcore angler, you've come to the right place. This is a weekly podcast that will interview some of the top smallmouth bass anglers in North America. Travis and his guest will discuss what it takes to consistently catch big smallmouth, and you'll get a glimpse inside the mind of a trophy smallmouth angler. And now, here's your host of the Smallmouth Crush Podcast, Travis Manson.
Yo, welcome to the Smallmouth Crush Podcast. Here we go again, another week talking smallmouth fishing with some of the best smallmouth anglers across the country. And this week again is no different, but something a little different style of smallmouth fishing that we may be used to here on the show. So I'm really looking forward to bringing our next guest on. But before we go there, let's talk, of course, about The Real Shot. You guys know The Real Shot. Realshot.com has been a sponsor of this podcast for the whole season, and they're very generous in giving out a 15% off your first order over there at The Real Shot. If you haven't been to The Real Shot, they got a lot of tackle, a lot of fishing equipment. They deal a lot with hunting as well. So if we have any deer hunters, bow hunting, all that kind of good stuff that you may be watching or listening, they have a bunch of great products over there. And you can use my code SmallmouthCrush15 to get 15% off anything in the store. So pretty cool little deal. I encourage you guys to go check them out, therealshot.com. Let's bring on our next guest. Travis, how are you?
Very good, sir. Happy to be here.
Yeah, man. So listen, super excited. I'm going to have a bunch of questions for you. I really want to start off, if you could, give us a little introduction, a little bit background about yourself, kind of how you got started, and then also talk a little bit about some of your plans here in the future.
There he is.
I live in the sticks.
I know.
I live in the sticks.
Travis, welcome to the show. I know you have a lot of expertise when it comes to smallmouth fishing, but before we get into it, if you could, just take a little bit of time to talk a little bit about your background, some of your fishing experiences, and then kind of what you have planned here in the future as well.
Yes, sir. I grew up in upstate New York, probably smack dab between Oneida and Cayuga. I fished for everything that had fins on it when I was a kid, from brook trout to muskie. If it existed, I fished for it. And I actually had a feeder to the Susquehanna River right on our property behind the house. Been addicted to moving water all my life, and that's where I came from. So smallmouth, they've always been in my blood ever since I was, I think I caught my first one when I was 7 on a jitterbug, first one. I think I still got that photo. It was like a 16-incher or something on a jitterbug. I was hooked. I fished the St. Lawrence, all across the Great Lakes, Beauchene, and then the Marine Corps took me all over the country. But there's something about river smallmouth that it's in my blood. And,
yeah. You know, there's so many opportunities. I'm so thankful for you for coming on this podcast because, you know, we have a lot of lake guys. We have a lot of big water guys. The stream fishing is really intriguing because, for one, there's a lot of places where you can just get away from people. You know, you have a whole stretch of river to yourself, I'm sure, in a lot of situations. And the fish just, they cooperate, right? I mean, most of the time they cooperate. And there's a lot of different ways to catch them. So right now, like currently, what would you consider your home water now?
As I mentioned, being from upstate New York, after my dad passed away, I posed the question to my wife, if you could go anywhere and live, where would you want to be? And she said, well, anywhere out of the snowbelt of upstate New York, you know, and that big U right around Syracuse. And I said, well, we got to be near river smallmouth in the middle of nowhere. And I pretty much labeled it the Bermuda Triangle or river smallmouth on the East Coast. And that's the Shenandoah River, the Potomac, North-South Branch, you know, where I'm at. I'm in the Eastern Panhandle of West Virginia. And it doesn't get any better. And I'm only, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours from the Susquehanna if I want to get real fancy and go up to the big water. But you nailed it. I've got about probably 40 to 50 miles of river that I've seen three fishermen on in about 16 years that we've been here. If we weren't doing this tonight, I'd be out throwing a topwater right now up around the bend here near the house. So, you know, that's my relaxation at the end of the work week. And first thing Saturday morning, first light, we're back on it. So I gain a lot more out of teaching people on the water anymore than I actually get out of doing. My number one fishing partner is my wife. And thank goodness she loves to fish. She'll even want to go on days that I don't want to. She'll be like, well, you know, the river's looking perfect for, you know, this and that. And I'll be like, you know, by midday we're on the water. So,
right.
I'm certainly blessed in that regard.
Walk me through the environment, if you could, too, sure. of the river system. I'd love to get a visual to our viewers and listeners, kind of the type of water that you're fishing.
A great deal of our water to the layperson would probably seem more like it would hold trout. Probably large brown trout, like looking water. Median water, and by that I mean stretches well down from the headwaters. In trout terms, it would be where your larger brown trout start eating suckers and chubs rather than sipping mayflies. And that's pretty much how I approach my smallmouth fishing. And it goes back to my youth, how I read water. I concentrate on very few areas for the big smallmouth. I'm not a numbers guy to go out, you know, 40, 50 smallmouth and maybe one of them be 15, 16 inches. That's not my gig. And sometimes I drive my wife kind of nuts on that. I would rather get 5 bites, quality bites a day, and those fish be citation fish. 20 inches and up is what most river smallmouth fishermen consider, you know, large fish. And at the beginning of the season, I typically have the goal of anywhere between 20 and 25 smallmouth, 20 inches and up to reach that. And that's on my water. Those are big fish. They're big old fish. They're wise fish in crystal clear water. Hmm. So that kind of is roundabout what we do. A friend of mine down in Maryland calls it your smallmouth fishing in trout water, pretty much.
Yeah. No, I can relate. I can definitely get a visual of that. There's so many small streams. And how are you getting access to these waters? Are you wading, or are you taking some type of boat or canoe or kayak, or what's your setup typically?
I'm a kayak guy. I spend more time out of my kayak than I do in it. For me, it's simply a taxi from one spot to another. I will anchor up my kayak with a power pole, you know, the micro anchor. I'll set up on a sandbar. It could be 40, 50 yards from where I intend to fish. I'll fish a spot. I'll go up and grab my kayak and float through where I just fished. I'll get down to the bottom of the run where I just fished. I might anchor up again and try it from a different angle, casting upstream, up and across, rather than down. And I carry a lot of different presentations for that up and down, you know, presentation, whether or not you're casting up and across or, you know, down depth. CFS, cubic feet per second is a big deal on my drop rates on all my lead and plastic. I'm absolutely anally retentive when it comes to my jig heads and my plastic dropping right and looking natural.
So there's a lot that goes into river fishing, crystal clear water. Although they might not see a lot of pressure, they're very smart. You know, a 20-inch fish in a river is probably just as old as a big, you know, smallmouth out on the Great Lakes, I would imagine.
Yes, sir.
Some different approaches. I'd love to hear how you approach that with different techniques. And what are some of the key ways that you catch these smallmouth in these smaller streams?
I'm a big proponent and I think Rick Klun said this best years and years ago. If you wish to know you know, about the owl, study the mouse. And by that, if you want to know more about smallmouth, get in tune with what they're eating. Anyone that's ever fished with me would definitely tell you every single fish, it doesn't matter if it's a rock bass or a, you know, 10-inch pumpkin seed, whatever, I'm looking in their mouth. I'm watching that fish when they come in, if anything's flying out of its mouth. The natural approach definitely aids catching larger fish. Having an idea as to when Dobson flies, Helger mites are showing up, whether or not fish are on minnows, suckers, chubs, crawdads, all that stuff comes into it. And I follow that through the season very, very closely. So knowing the food chain is huge. And I'm really big on drop rate with my lead and plastic.
If you had ideal conditions in a stream, you know, I definitely want to pick your brain what happens when it gets muddy and rainy and if you even target those fish in those conditions. But in the perfect scenario, what type of baits are you throwing at these fish when you can?
I've got probably two perfect scenarios that I look forward to where it's hard for me to sleep at night when I know it's setting up right. One would be the cold water period when they consolidate in the winter holes, where I'm probably fishing a 50-yard stretch where it'll take me 4 hours to fish it effectively, where those fish are stacked. They're in there in numbers where I like to use the term where 90% of the fish are in 10% of the river, where they're going to winter over. My wheelhouse is fishing extremely methodically in the cold water period, mid-October when we get that time change.
Okay.
With that diminished light.
Right.
I key on that. A lot of guys will look forward to in the spring, you know, and the birds start chirping and stuff like that. And, you know, we start being able to sit out on the porch, you know, in the evening and stuff like that in the spring. But for me, as all my friends would attest, I look forward to the give me some snow flurries and give me when, the deer are on the rut. That's about go time for me on big fish.
That's when you're going to be targeting them.
And absolutely. We really do some damage, toward the end of the year, and I'll fish right up until, typically if I can get a 3-day warming trend into mid to late December, the later, the better, I'm still out. And I don't care what the weather is. If I have an iced up, a lot of my wintering holes will, ice up because they're in canyons, really steep to topography where they're getting no sun throughout the day. And I rely a lot on those 3-day warming trends. If I can get a cast into those wintering holes, I'm going to score. And by that, I'm talking, you know, some of our fall days, late winter days, you can get on 4 or 5 fish that are 20 or better.
What type of baits are you throwing at these fish that time of year?
That time of year, I would be throwing 2 baits. I don't know if you want me to mention the one because I'm fairly certain you probably use it.
Well, yes, definitely share it. I want to hear about it.
The first one would be, they're both rigged. Would absolutely be a Nico tadpole on a drop shot.
No kidding. That's one of my favorites. So that's a recent bait. Well, I've been experimenting with that bait over the last year or so. I'm not sure how long it's been out there on the market, but the Nico tadpole has really done well. It's designed. It looks like a tadpole, right? But for me, I believe it imitates a goby. So I use that a lot on the Great Lakes. What do you think that imitates in your streams, or is it a tadpole? You think it imitates the willow cats? Is that what you call them?
Yeah, stone cats, mad toms, willow cats. Yeah, okay. They're all the same. basically looking like a, you know, that 3-inch range baby catfish or the layman. Sure.
Are you drop shotting that or on a yes. jig head?
Drop shot.
Okay. Okay. And is that something that works year round for you, or is it specifically in the colder months?
I could, if I wanted numbers. No doubt about it. I could do some major damage on that bait in a drop shot year round. Okay. I have found that bigger fish react more to those mad toms, stone cat, small chubs when I get 40 degrees and under, and colder the better. Right prior to that ice. Second one, and probably some people have read, you know, on Ned Cady's site, he and I collaborated for years, I guess, on various Ned rigs. I used to throw Ned rigs 12 months a year, and I did that for probably 7 years before people were all over it and before the boom hit. Original mushroom, you know, 32nd, 16th ounce, original gopher mushrooms on, you know, the cut stick bait, the zero. And I would pre-soak those and scent them for years. I have found that in very recently, I would say probably I started playing with this last year, I got immersed more in the natural looking lures. And by that, earlier I touched on knowing your food chain in your river. Throughout the season, there is a definite preference for big fish to key in on where crawdads are at, predominantly where helgermites are at, the months that the helgermites are showing up on your rocks. If you go out and flip rocks, the size of the crawdads throughout, you know, from spring to midsummer increases. Being in touch with that food chain, and again, going back to what Rick Hunt said, and I love that quote, and being in tune with what they're eating. Second bait, and quite honestly, the only time that I throw it anymore, that time of year right there, sub, you know, 40 degree water temps, that's when I throw a Ned. And by a Ned, I got a 16th ounce custom football that I throw it on. I sent that because I don't want that bait. And this is contrary to popular belief, but I'm not a big proponent anymore after years of doing it, where I want a bait sitting up like this.
Okay.
I don't see anything that our fish eat that sits on the bottom like a pencil. Everything that I use sits like that right there. It's not that. I want it natural. Not that. I've never once seen a crawdad sitting up like that on its tail, for instance. So my Neds, I use a Nico Ned on my custom football that a buddy of mine up in Pennsylvania, he pours all my lead for me. I scent those very heavily. I'm a big proponent of scent. I've got a really long dissertation on the In Fisherman site about why I believe scent makes a difference with smallmouth. And I think it's often overlooked. You know, guys don't want to stain their boat carpets, or they think it's some kind of lucky rabbit's foot, but I am a big proponent of scent. I will scent that Nico, you know, that Ned stick by Nico is the best one I've thrown. 40, 50 fish on that. There's no salt in it. So the old days, what I would do is I would take all of my Ned Rig baits, you know, Ned Rig baits, and I would pre-soak them to get the salt out of them. I didn't want the salt to be throwing off my, drop rates. With some brands out there, you've got baits that are salted 45%, 10%, 15%, all this. And when you're a good stick with a jig, and believe me, I'm still trying to master it myself. And one day maybe I will when I'm old and feeble, but getting those drop rates down is paramount on the fish that I pursue. And I don't want to take a bait out of a package and it drop quicker than this bait over here or this bait over here. I want to know right out of the package what kind of drop rate I'm getting. And no salt is greatly advantageous to that. I used to, like I touched on, I used to pre-soak baits for a month and then sent them. I would let them dry, sent them, and then over the winter, if I wasn't on the water, you know, come March, April, or whatever, they'd be ready to roll. The Neko stuff, and it has really been advantageous for me on big fish because of the no salt, and the stuff looks like exactly what they're eating. And I had no ties to anybody. I'll be the first one to tell you that. I throw the absolute best stuff that I feel is on the market to do what I love doing. And it doesn't matter who makes it. I'm just a big proponent of Neko baits that I've been on lately. I've taken more big fish in the last year and a half since I've started throwing Neko than my previous 45 years of river fishing. And, you know, and again, no ties to them, but telling it the way it is. I'm blessed to be able to throw whatever's out there on the market, and I'm just telling it the way it is.
So it's really intriguing, your theory on drop weight and how it falls. That's something that's obviously important to you, doing this every day out there and seeing the different conditions and experimenting. I mean, you've probably caught more river smallmouth than most people in the country. And so we have to circle back on this a little bit and dig a little bit deeper. So fall rate to you, are you looking at, do you want a bait that falls super slow, or is there a specific speed that you're looking for, or you just don't want something to land in the water on a piece of structure and just hit the bottom quick? What's your ideal, I guess, rate of fall, or what you're looking for? Does that change on the time of the year or how you're fishing it?
Right. Absolutely. It'll change throughout the season. The cold water season, I want that bait to drop on a dime. And that's when I fish my heaviest lead in that cold water season. If I'm 5 feet off, 6 feet off one way or another, it literally can mean not being bit. A lot of my water that time of year with, you know, all that algae, the plankton's gone. I've had that first frost, you know, I've got visibility into 15 foot. I can see how fish react to baits, and that's really helped me. So that time of year, and that's why that drop shot, it's one of the most underutilized tools on rivers. I don't understand why, but it's awesome. I mean, it really is. And I think a lot of river guys equate the drop shot with, you know, they see, you know, Taco Ito up there and looking at, you know, these big screens and everything, and they're vertical. That's not how I fish a drop shot. I bomb cast drop shots, and I bring it into the zone, and I dead stick it. The summer months, I want the absolute slowest drop that I can get, and I want to trigger those fish on the drop in shallower water, like your riffle areas, your aerated water, your a little bit cooler water in the summer, in the drought conditions like I've got right now. I want to give them the longest look to have those fish react on the drop, and that's when again, no salt. It's really advantageous for that slow drop, that real methodical drop. I got on this drop deal years ago with the Senko craze. And I fished Senkos religiously for years. Again, no ties, you know, dirty on moto. I would pre-soak them. I would rough them up. I would, you know, all this to slow their drop and everything. And a lot of the work that I did with Ned Rigs was to emulate a 3- and 4-inch Senko drop, but with different profiles. And I was doing it with 32nd ounce heads. And that's why I would leach all the salt out of, you know, the more popular Ned Rig baits. That Senko drop is deadly on summer smallmouth. It just, but I like the versatility of being able to simulate food better than a Senko.
So how
are
you?
Or a cut stick. Or
how are you taking the salt out of these baits that you want to experiment with and use? What's your system for that?
Lukewarm water. Now, one of the, now again with Nico, I don't have to do anything with them. As soon as I get them, they go into my tubs of scent. I do nothing with them. They've been pre-soaked and scent for a minimum of 2 months before I throw them.
Whoa.
You're more. Yes, sir.
I got to ask. I mean, are you willing to talk about your scent? Is it something you can just buy? Is this a special, you know, a mixture of ingredients that you use? Could you share something with us along those lines?
Yes, sir. I think back in probably 2015, Ned Cady and I worked on an article for the InFisherman Midwest Finesse site. And at that time, I went into great detail, my scent system, pre-soaking baits, and leaching the salt out of them. And at that time, I contacted ProCure out in Washington. And ProCure scents they're all natural. And essentially, I called them up and I told them what I wanted. And you know, about 10 days later, I had, you know, enough scent to last me the next 10 years of the ingredients I wanted in it, of what I think makes a difference on baits. That was an oil-based scent that I originally had custom made by them. If someone calls ProCure, and again, I have no ties to ProCure. I'm just, I use it. Mm-hmm. If somebody calls them up and says, well, can I get, you know, Travis Myers' custom ProCure? Not saying anybody should, because I'll give you an easier route. They actually will contact me and ask me whether or not it's okay if they give out this custom blend that I came up with. Which is nice, you know, it kind of Right. Strokes the ego a little bit, but there are easier ways to do it. I'm a really big proponent in the last couple of years. I've been playing with water-soluble scents rather than oil. All of my baits go in ProCure, water-soluble. Now, that's the key, not okay. Oil. Oil doesn't dissipate in the water whatsoever. It may add retention rate when a smallmouth picks up a bait, but it doesn't spread out into the water column like water-soluble does. If anyone's used a water-soluble scent, you'll see this big cloud appear in the water, and oil doesn't do that. All of my baits go into water-soluble ProCure shrimp.
I'm just taking notes.
Now, a lot of guys are going to be familiar with a lot of the JDM baits, as am I. Being a finesse, largely a finesse guy, I was enamored with a lot of the JDM baits back before they were available here in the States. And almost every one of them that you get over here a pack of plastics, they don't smell like what's available here. Most smallmouth guys or bass guys in general are familiar with Kaitag, fat impact. Look on there and see what that's scented with. Your squids, your shrimp, kind of the cat got out of the bag a little bit with Taco Ito when you went up north. And I keep touching on that because that's up around my home, my stomping grounds up there when I was a kid. Right. But he kind of let the cat out of the bag a little bit on that shrimp deal and soaking baits and pre-soaking baits here recently with his big win up there. He's absolutely right. I can't explain it. I'm not a smallmouth. I don't like to talk in those terms, but there is something to it. Your Kitex, a lot of your JDM stuff is shrimp and squid. My stuff sits in it for 2 months before I'll throw them. I'll look in them weekly to see how it's dissipating over the baits and whether or not it's being soaked up. And I'll add a little bit more here and there. When I get off the water, my baits go in it. When I'm on the water, I carry these, I have these little sandwich Tupperware deals that all my baits are in it and they're covered in it. Big proponent on the scent. And it makes a difference. And again, living where we do, seeing how fish react has really, really helped me as an angler. I've seen, fish absolutely repelled from some popular baits. Other ones where they would inhale them without hesitation. And the only difference would be scent. And again, I believe Ned still got that article up, but it was very extensive back to, I think it was 2016. 2015, okay. 2016, Ned and I collaborated on that.
So,
case in point, most anglers right now are probably clamoring to get their hands on a Berkeley flatworm.
Mm-hmm.
That's not exactly, the most intricate of baits right. to look at it.
Exactly.
But there's something to it. Exactly. So.
And you feel it's the scent over the action of that bait.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think, there are hundreds of baits that in the water would simulate exactly what a flatworm looks like, either on a 32nd ounce gopher or, a drop shot. And it's loaded. You've drop shot at them, most all of us have, and they're heavy, for the size of the bait, they're heavy. They're loaded up on scent. The action off that flatworm,
doesn't get me going.
I could walk into Walmart. Right. So,
and that's been my hesitation. That's been my hesitation about. I'm not saying it. I know it works. But I just can't get over the fact that I've tested in an aquarium. I've seen what it looks like underwater. It doesn't do anything to me. It doesn't act like how I would expect the perfect drop shot bait to act. But there is definitely something about that scent. So circling back on the scent, Procure, if we get some type of water-soluble, shrimp mixture, that's what you would recommend?
Absolutely.
Now, some baits you find, obviously Nico's a unique type of plastic.
Perfect.
While you were gone, I was on the website.
That was a doozy. Oh.
well, funny story for the viewers and listeners. You're in the backwoods there, and the internet's not the greatest. I'm just glad I was able to jump on the website and get my scent here before the viewers and listeners get their hands on this in a couple of weeks. So I'm glad your internet went down, actually. It's really fascinating.
Thanks for
you are a true believer in scent, and I know that you've experimented so much and you have like a system down. So I'm just curious. I know you like to soak for a month or two. There's different types of plastics out there, you know, Nico or Z-Man versus, you know, your standard plastics that are on the market. Do you see any issues with that water soluble mixture on different baits, or can you leave them soaking for a month or two and it doesn't matter?
Sure. For years, quite honestly, the only plastics that I owned were Z-Man. You know, again, numerous articles on Ned Cady's site of various trips I've had with Z-Man throughout the seasons, throughout the years, all that stuff. The oil-based scents with Z-Man are what you want. The Nico is medical-grade plastic, and it's really difficult for the scents to permeate those baits. That ProCure shrimp will permeate the Nico baits beautifully, and it's the best stuff I've used with the Nico baits. And I'm a strong proponent of Nico stuff, of course, but that plastic is just different with the Nico baits. And as you can probably attest, you know, drop shot in the tadpole, there's no reason, rhyme or reason, little bait like that should last 20, 30 fish. But I mean, those things are tough. I mean, and the reason I bring that up is the oil based, some of your Kytex stuff, some of your Z-Man stuff, you're going to be better off with that. With your higher grade plastics, you want that water soluble. And you want to leave it on as long as possible and just let it do its thing. And
now, let me ask you this. If you had to rush it, okay, let's say you had to rush it.
Sure.
Would you be comfortable? Is it better to at least soak it overnight versus 2 months? Do you still feel that has some effect to it? Or would you be like, it's kind of a lost cause?
Oh, sure.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. Okay.
No, sure. Yeah, some is going to be better than none. And speaking from a big fish perspective, I'm also kind of a proponent of, and this is kind of out there for river smallmouth fishermen, but I watch a lot of what the big swim bait California anglers do for various reasons. They're tuned into bigger fish, even though it's a different species than what I fish for, different environment. But the minimal rigging, the scent, having the scent on the bait, allowing that bait to skate better in a fish's mouth, you're going to get more longevity out of your baits when it's not getting all gnarled up in that sandpaper lip of a bass, and you're going to get better hook sets. The slicker that bait is, and it moves more in those fish's mouth. And you've taken enough big smallmouth, you know, in your lifetime, sir, to know, you know, you get up above 5 pounds, and their mouths are just, they're just like mechanically strong, yes, like vice grips. Mm-hmm. They're from crushing crawdads. It could be perch, you know, up on a night or whatever, but you know, every little advantage I've got, you know, on those big fish, I'm taking it. Big proponent of scent. I add rattles to my jig heads, whatever I can do. I put eyeballs on all my baits, you know, three-dimensional eyes. I'm a big proponent of that as well.
Okay.
So know, it probably goes back. Sure.
So putting eyes on your baits, are you, let's say you're Ned rigging, would you try to put something on your jig head, or is there a way to actually get some eyes on your soft plastic as well?
I'll put 7mm eyes on any of my Ned sticks.
Oh, the internet's gone again. Just when we're getting to the good stuff, guys. We're going to try to get him back here. And by the way, while we're waiting for Travis to come back online, I've done a lot of interviews with guys across the country. And although this is very grainy, we can't see his picture as well as we'd like. And we're losing them here and there. I got really excited over this one so far. Just the scent alone and the fact that he is so adamant about using it. And now throw in these 3D eyes. Do it mold 7mm. It's as far as I got. I can't wait for him to get back on here. There he is.
We got to have a storm coming.
Something.
It's already passed or something.
I was just talking here in the background while you were gone. I was like, man, this was I interviewed a lot of people, but some of these little key things that you're talking about, man, is like golden. This is like, this got me excited tonight. So real quick, talking about the eyes, 7mm, do it eyes, and you'll try to secure that to the plastic as well. How do you do that? Or does it just stick, or are you super gluing it? What's your trick there?
I super glue it. Like to the Nico Ned stick, I'll super glue it right next to my football. Did I use that 16-ounce football with a little gammy in it that my friend pours for me? And I'll scent that in a way where, you know, and again, it's not sitting up there like a pencil. I know that that's all the rage. I don't want my bait doing that. I want, you know, and again, I'm as probably as anally retentive on my lead as I am my scent and all that stuff. But my friend that pours all my lead for me, you know, I want something sitting like that in the water. And that's a, you know, obviously a Nico Helgermite. A lot of guys are getting onto the Nico stuff, most noticeably the Helgermite. But one mistake I've been seeing them do is they're putting it on a mushroom. And never once have I ever seen in the natural environment a Helgermite looking like that on the bottom of the river. You know, so I use a modified, what we call a sled head, that my friend pours. Very popular on East Coast rivers, but it's just a killer. You can't wedge these things, you know. And again, I've got 15, 16 years of using mushrooms. These have replaced my mushroom heads, plain and simple. They're superior. They won't wedge.
Does your friend sell these as well, or is this just a little special thing here?
No, he sells them. All the ones that if you know, if somebody gets a hold of him and said, you know, hey, give me the best sled for you know, the Nico Craw, he's going to know what it is.
Okay. Do you mind giving out that information, or?
No, in fact, tonight on the way home from work, I stopped and at the mailbox, and he had 300 of them sitting for me, and he's been hard at work for me getting all these right. Now, I use three different sizes. I use a 16th and an 8th, but I use different size Gamagatsus in them. These things are paramount to river fishing, and a lot of guys know that. But I think they typically pair them with the wrong baits that may have a tendency to want to stand, you know, stand the bait up. They're unbelievable with the Nico stuff. I mean, they really are. They're live bait without the Folgers can. And again, I can fish these slower, deeper, and just emulate bait so much better than with anything that's out there on the market. Nothing touches it. I mean, it just doesn't. Ryan Aluni,
and just like that, he cuts out again, giving us the contact, giving us the dealer, and he's gone. We're going to try to get him back here. In fact, I think we need to get Travis on a live over the winter months, definitely when he has a little bit better internet. And I think Epic Eric and myself really could get into it. Like, if you're a river, first of all, there's a lot of things he talked about that's going to help outside of a river fishing environment. But I know we got a lot of river smallmouth guys. Of course, the Susquehanna River here in Pennsylvania. There's so many great smallmouth rivers across the country. This was just, this was like a little teaser, this podcast, I think. I think he's got a lot more tricks up his sleeve. And if he's willing to share, I think we definitely want to get him back on. Let me know in the comments below what you think. Because again, I know this is a hard one to get through just with all the grainy picture, perhaps the sound and the quality, but the message here has been strong. It hit me real strong. Super excited, super excited. Hopefully he comes back on here soon. Okay. You were just giving out the dealer's name, the guy. Before we cut off. So how do we get a hold? How do we get a hold of some of these weights and whatnot, these jig heads?
Actually, for probably the last 20 years, I've been a member of a site called riversmallies.com. I was probably one of the first 15 or 20 members on that 20 years ago, and I'm still on there. Ryan is still, he's on there. You can go on River Smallies and find Ryan Aluni. It's A-L-U-N-I. There are some different makers of this lead on the East Coast because it is that productive. In my estimation, Ryan makes the best one. And the reason I say that is weight distribution of the lead. Some of the other ones I've experimented with, the lead's going to come off of there at the end of the day. It's going to be flopping off.
So we talked about. So
I could talk to you all night, sir. Believe me.
So Ryan Aluni, A-L-U-N-I.
Yes, sir.
Perfect. He's got yes, all sir. The goods.
Yeah, close enough. Yeah, close enough.
As you were cutting in and out, I also mentioned. I really would love, Travis, if you're up for it, perhaps this winter, to come on one of our live shows with my buddy Epic Eric, who's definitely a bait hound that's going to dig all this information and really get into it, because we have a lot of river smallmouth anglers. Of course, the Susquehanna River here, and of course, there's a lot of great bodies of water all over the country, but you have so much wealth of information, and a lot of this transfers over to the big water as well. And so let's get your internet right this winter. Get into a setting maybe where we can go over this stuff and really dig into it. If you're willing to share, man, we got an audience for you. And this stuff was great if you're up for it.
Oh, absolutely. I love to teach and awesome. I love to pass on my 40 years on the water. So
sure.
Yeah, I love this. So
yeah, man. So this was great stuff.
Yeah, no, we are running. No question about it.
All right, we're in. We're going to get them back. We are running a little bit out of time, but I got to ask you a couple questions here that I like to ask everyone on the podcast.
Sure.
One, I'd like to know, what's your personal best smallmouth?
Oh, in a river? In moving
anywhere.
Water?
I'd like to know, yeah, moving water and maybe just if you caught a bigger one outside of a river, definitely.
I have my biggest was probably 7.2 out of a Nida back in the late 80s.
Wow.
On a jig and pig. That's eighth ounce jig and pig with a number 101 pork frog on it.
Sure. How about a river fish? I know it's rare, right? Almost non-existent to catch a 7. But they're, I mean,
yeah, I don't yeah, know. Yeah, it really is. I've got, I would guesstimate 6 fish over 6.
Those are some big fish. Those are some big fish.
And those are in waters that are about 2 to 3 cast wide tops.
Mm-hmm. I probably already know the answer to this. But if I was to say next year you can only use one bait and one bait only to fish the whole year, what would that be?
All year? all year long.
Bait. Only one bait.
Nico Craw on my
really
on my sled. Yeah, gotcha. The Nico Craw
on the sled. Which we're gonna find out how to get that
now. Right now, right now, I'd be throwing a Depp's glide bait.
A Depp's glide bait, really?
Yes, sir.
Jeez, that opens up a whole another conversation. All right, we are definitely bringing
I don't talk
you back.
About that.
Okay. We're definitely going to bring you back, guys. I promise you, we're going to bring Travis back over the wintertime on one of our live shows and really dig into this because this was an awesome podcast. Again, thank you for coming on tonight. What would you if people want to learn a little bit more about you, do you have any – are you on social media at all, or how can people follow you, or what's the best way if they have questions to just get a hold of you if you don't mind?
Unfortunately and fortunately at the same time, I'm in law enforcement. So, social media and I, we don't mix. But like I say, if, someone were to get on riversmallies.com, they can find me on there. Okay.
What I'm going to do is link that
with Ned Cady, his number.
Okay. I'm going to link riversmallmouths.com here at the bottom of the description if anyone's interested in joining that and learning a little bit more. I'm sure there's a bunch of forums and things like that on there that can get people up to speed when it comes to smallmouth fishing.
And it's free to join. I've been on there for, like I say, I've been on there for years. And I love to get questions, phone calls, email, whatever. I'll talk smallmouths until midnight. So.
Right.
It's not a problem answering anybody. I love to teach. So
that's awesome. That's awesome. Good stuff. Well, listen, again, thank you for coming on, and we will certainly have you back hopefully in the future here, guys. Look for that coming up here in the next couple months for sure. Definitely want to learn a little bit more. So thank you very much. And as always, guys, until next time, we'll see you on the water.
Thanks so much for listening today. Make sure that you're subscribed to the show and follow us on Instagram at Smallmouth Crush. Also, the YouTube channel, Smallmouth Crush. And if you feel so inclined, please leave us a 5-star rating and comment with a review below. And as always, until next time, we'll see you on the water.